Today we have this reading, this gospel reading that we're so very familiar with, a reading that is often presented to us in the church's liturgical year. It's as if the church wants us, in her wisdom, to come often before this longest and most powerful story of the resurrection in the Gospel of Luke. We have these two disciples walking along the way. We're told it's on the first day of the week. It's on Resurrection Day. But they have left Jerusalem. They've left what they knew and what they had heard to go away from all of that as they make this journey. There's many curiosities, many things that have attracted the attention of scholars and theologians and saints across the centuries. One of them is simply, where is Emmaus? We don't have a record of a town or a village by that name. We don't know where Emmaus was exactly. Some have speculated that it was perhaps a Roman town. Indeed, St. Bede the Venerable in the 8th century even came up with a history for the town, that it was a town founded by Marcus Aurelius. In fact, in some ways, modern scholarship has pointed that that is more than likely what it perhaps was, as a Roman legion town, a place where the Roman Empire was present, where one of the Roman legions would have been based, that it would make sense that it would disappear in both the Christian and Jewish record, because they would have no reason, no purpose to record this place. It wasn't a place where a particular saint was associated with or so forth. Emmaus disappears from the record.
The scriptures indicate its distance of about 60 stadia, 11 kilometers or about 7 miles from Jerusalem to Emmaus.
So we know it was in the region of Judea, at least. Jerusalem, of course, is a central place in the Gospel of Luke. Luke's Gospel is divided into two major sections. The first one, the ministry of Jesus up in Galilee, and the second, from chapter 9, verse 51 onwards, is this decision that Jesus makes there when he sets his face resolutely to go towards Jerusalem. And then the focus and the energy of the Gospel of Luke is all around Jerusalem from that point onwards. But these disciples, they're not headed to Jerusalem, they're headed away from Jerusalem. They're a picture of absolute loss of hope. These two have lost faith, they've lost confidence, they're depressed, they have no hope. And as they walk away, you can imagine them dragging their feet along the road as they try and make sense of what has just happened in the last few days. St. Bede, when he reflects upon this scene, says that in lots of ways it's significant that it is just over 7 miles. Because in some ways, they walk a mile for each of the days that they've just experienced during Holy Week. And of course, it's on the sixth day, the Friday, that Jesus was crucified. It was on that day that all of their hopes were shattered. Because as they said, we had hoped that he would be the one to set us free. We hoped that he would be the Messiah. He had proved himself a prophet, one mighty in deed and word. But he wasn't able to do what it was that the Messiah was meant to do. He wasn't able to bring deliverance for the people of Israel from the Roman Empire. And so they said he's a failure. That's absolutely clear. He wasn't the Messiah because he'd been crucified by the Roman Empire. He'd been put to death by the Roman Empire. He hadn't overthrown them. He hadn't set them free at all. And so they walk downhearted, dejected. And when Jesus then comes and stands among them, when he comes and walks with them, he begins to first question them, first challenge them, first find out the reason why they're so downcast. We don't know also who the two disciples are. One is named, it's Cleopas. We don't know whether it's the Cleopas that is present in the Gospel of John. We're told that Mary, the wife of Cleopas, was there at the foot of the cross. So perhaps it's this married couple. Perhaps it's Cleopas and Mary who are the ones who walk along. Some have speculated that the other disciple is the evangelist Luke, that he's able to know what happens because he was there, he was present, and he was able to experience it, but he was too ashamed to name himself because he hadn't been able to recognize the presence of Jesus. Regardless, this disciple is unnamed. So in lots of ways, it becomes a place for us to insert ourselves into this story as we acknowledge that sometimes we're walking away from Jerusalem. We're walking away from the center of that attention. We're walking away from the presence of God on earth. And we're just trying to make sense of our lives, but going in the wrong direction. So St. Bede says that it's on the sixth mile, representing the sixth day, when Jesus comes and begins to walk with them, because they're lost in the death, they're lost in the defeat. They haven't yet experienced the freedom of the resurrection. And as he walks along with them, as he begins to explain the very presence of Jesus, the very presence of the Messiah, right across the biblical witness, beginning with Moses and going through the writings of the prophets and the other writings, Jesus is able to demonstrate to them the power of understanding these stories so that they're no longer simply just black ink on white pages. They're no longer just dead and dry and dusty stories that were told to them by their mothers and fathers, but stories that now make sense, stories that have their purpose, stories that are finally interpreted in the light of Jesus. And they are able to reflect later, did not our hearts burn within us? Did not these stories and these scriptures suddenly make sense for us? Did not our hearts come alive knowing as Jesus walked among us that these scriptures finally made sense? It's our hope, it's our dream that as we read the scriptures that the same thing will happen to us, that we will begin to understand and comprehend the true meaning and place of the scriptures when we find them, when we read them in the light of the resurrection, when we read them in the light of the Christian revelation. And then, as they come to this final mile, it's not finished. The eighth mile is not complete, because they pause and they stop. They don't have to go all the way beyond Emmaus. And as Embiid says, it's because it's then, when they pause and when they invite Jesus to remain with them, that the eighth day begins to dawn. And it's on this final mile, this final part of their journey, when they invite Jesus to come and stay with them, a significant breakthrough is beginning to happen, because they've stopped running away from Jerusalem. They pause in this escape and they say, no, let us wait here. Let's wait and pause and remain with this man who's as yet unrecognized. And as they sit down for the meal, and as Jesus, following in Jewish tradition and custom, begins with the bread, as he takes the bread and prays the prayer of blessing over the bread, as he breaks it, suddenly their eyes are open. Suddenly they see really who it is that is there before them, and they're able to then understand the power that Jesus is for them. Their eyes are opened because their hearts have already burned. They've understood the scriptures in the light of Christ. And so now they're able to understand the full significance of this action. Of course, the church understands that this scene that we have before us is the gathering of the Eucharist. We gather first to hear the scriptures proclaimed. We gather first to allow them to come into our lives. And then we move into the breaking of the bread. Then we move into that experience of allowing the Lord to feed us and nourish us. And why does Jesus then disappear? Perhaps it's simply because his work is now done. He's able to go from them because he himself returns to Jerusalem. And he leaves them to drop everything at that stage. Even though it's dangerous, even though it's risky to travel at night, they cannot wait. They cannot stay now away from Jerusalem. They must go back. And so they rush. And you can imagine that the journey on the way back to Jerusalem is so different from that slow, meandering, doubtful, and depressed journey that they had just undertaken on their way from Jerusalem back to Emmaus. Now their hearts were enlivened. Now that they were able to walk with light feet, now they're able to run and to rejoice and to celebrate as they finally get back into Jerusalem, as they go to visit and be with the other disciples, as they're able to tell their own story, as they're able to share how their hearts had burned within them when the scriptures were revealed to them, as they recognize Jesus in the breaking of the bread, as they begin to be the evangelists, as they begin to be the people that God has called them to be. The story is often called on the road to Emmaus. But I suspect that it's the road from Emmaus that is the more significant. It's the road from Emmaus, the road to Jerusalem, that is the story that we are invited to imitate. It's that journey that we are called to make as we surrender our hearts, as we recognize Christ, as we read the scriptures, as we find our life, find our nourishment in him, and as we run back to be at the very heart of the church, as we experience that, as we share that, and we become the evangelists and the people who proclaim and live this gospel of freedom and liberation. Amen.